for him, though.
Yeah, partly. You didn't like Jericho?
I loved it. I loved you playing him because it was so different and new. And it was cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those movies where you go, can we get people to believe this? You know, and then sometimes it's hard to... You always know that you're trying something if you can take a concept like that and maybe make it work. We know they're trying to make that work all the time in science. You know,
with rats.
Yeah, they are, really? And they have. Oh yeah, well that's where we start. You know, or if you watch the space program, chimps. But no, we. Yeah, of course they. You know, regenerative everything that we would like to. You know, go back to our. You know, Alzheimer's or anything.
Right.
They're doing it, but they have had success with rats per our script. Actually, that had no idea where they were at, and then did something.
They could go through a maze,
A maze, and go right to it because they've done it. And in this instance, this high concept of having information that seemed to be so vital in order to save something from being blown up, they were willing to do that. But what I think I wanted to do, if we were going to do that, was I wanted to show the holes in my head and the scars in the back of my neck. And of course, in old Hollywood, we don't want to see that. We don't want to see that. But I don't think that... I never played a moment in that scene without being kind of in pain.
Yeah.
And so, you know...
Well, all the subsequent scenes where you're agonized over which... this guy that's taking over inside you.
Yeah.
And we keep seeing repeatedly the...
That would confuse anyone.
The scars. Yeah.
And then there's things where he has actually great joy. I mean, he is a little bit childlike. He has great joy in that pastry shop that he's speaking at.
So did I, by the way. Yeah. Huh? All of us did. So did I. I enjoyed that. There's always somebody you want to...
He was having a really nice moment until that guy behind him started to
he was having
a Ryan Reynolds moment, but being tickled with it, and then that other guy kind of ruined it a little bit for him, and then he was no more Ryan Reynolds. You know, and then he was just hungry for sugar again. You know, I mean, that he just, you know, so he's very much, you know, childlike. But you know, for me it was the holes in the head, and it was the thing, and it was kind of temporary. We started to understand that. I mean, he couldn't even open a child's thing.
Well, when you were doing this with the director, would each take be more or less of the, you know, what am I going through, the agony or the pleasure I'm getting of having this other personality?
No, that was pretty much... what I would draw on. I have to tell you, I've never gone to a part where I almost didn't know how to play it. From the first day. I had grown a big beard and really long hair, and I came to the set without any benefit of rehearsal. And it's a complicated character for me. I've played a lot of characters, and you can go, oh, well, what's so... it was a complicated character for me. And it's the first movie I've ever done where I came to the set... And the first day I rape Gal. I say, hi, Gal, I'm dressing you and tying you up. But I had to cut all my hair at that moment and had to shave my beard because that was a scene they were going to start with.
Right.
We were going to start in prison. So I wasn't even sure what my voice was going to be. I wasn't sure about anything. So I went, And I went in to the makeup trailer and created that look you saw that day, probably 20 minutes before I walked into the set, and Mario's not here, but, you know, I had to start slow. So let's take off the beard, but let's leave this. Okay, let's strip this away, let's do this. And it's like, on this operation, these people probably don't care about me, so just take all my hair off. Just boom, 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 boom. Not very care, leave just a little pile on top. And we cultivated that look in about 40 minutes. And that may not seem much, but when you know that you're going to be in a film for 2 hours and everybody's going to look at it and you think, this doesn't seem fair. This doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
That I should have to live with this if it's wrong. But we kept talking it through and we kept talking it through. Mostly me talking to the mirror. And then And then I found my voice for the character because it reminded me of the first scene that he always has a thing around his neck. And it's not while it's choking him, but if he goes too far, it can choke him.
Like a dog.
Yeah.
On a leash.
So I thought that that was where I found, and when I did the look in the trailer and found the voice and backed everybody off from having the stitches in the back of my head and the two holes, which I said, please don't try to avoid shooting them. I said, don't shoot them on purpose because that looks silly too.
Right.
But as my head moves, don't editorially go away from that. And at that point, I was pretty locked in. Gaul was a little scared. I will say that.
Her first day too, right?
Huh?
It was her first day too?
No, I think she had been working.
Okay.
But the first day she met me.
So did you like taking that chance, a big chance to start a movie like that and kind of leap into it? Did you enjoy that?
I don't enjoy that. The movies that I have directed, or a lot of them that I've been a part of, I've always insisted on having a week to 2 weeks of rehearsal, which is really just not afforded movies anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lost art. It's a lost respect for the process. Things actually go faster. Performances even get better. Imagine if you could refine your article a day later. I wish I would have, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We all have that, oh, I would have done this, I would have done that. And that's what rehearsal's all about. But some people actually don't really even know how to rehearse, to be quite honest. I mean,
they just want to get in and do it.
Well, no. Even if you have the rehearsal process, I mean, some people, because it's not a thing done, it's like, well, how do we rehearse? Well, first you show up and you know all your lines, right?
For the whole show.
Right, so we can just do our lines right here without being on our feet. It seems very obvious right now talking about it, but, you know, you come to, you know, rehearsal ready to grow every day. But you don't grow every day if this is in your hand and you're looking. I'm not saying that you don't have to reference something, because when you're typically doing a movie by yourself, or not by yourself, but before you get to the set, all you hear is your own voice. And you hear your own voice doing other people's lines. So the first time I actually try to do the scene with you, I go, blah, blah, blah. And then you say, blah, blah, blah. And I think, what did he just say? Because it, like, it's not me, it's not something else. But what happens is it starts to roll. But you come prepared. You know, you don't come unprepared and go, oh, I'll use this 2 weeks. Because that's like gold. It's just not given. You know, or 1 week, or 4 days. Take it.
I wonder.
I mean, Gary and I would come into the, I invite him into my dressing room. He said, let's figure this out. You know, we're out there and on a tarmac, and there's a lot at stake, there's a lot of noise, and there's a lot of, we don't want to play ping pong with our dialogue, we want to be like we're really talking to each other. So, you know, Gary understands that. So there we are in the dressing room, I'm going, you know, and no one's watching. And, you know, that's how you, and at least you go out there and we try not to embarrass ourselves with big things trying to happen.
You did this on location in London, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, when you had that first day where you had to shave your beard and do the scene with Gaul, when you called home and said to your wife, you know, we had to go do this, and I shaved the beard and cut the hair and everything, and she said, I went through all of these weeks with you with that beard.
Right.
What was that reaction?
I just sent her the picture. She goes, what happened?
What did your kids think when you threw the whole thing out? Were they like, what's happened to Dad?
They kind of are used to their daddy a little bit. You know, mom's had to explain that daddy looks a little different at their PTA meetings. It just depends on the role. You know, I mean, I really, from Waterworld on, you know, is, well, daddy's hair is a little long and stuff, and then daddy's hair is a little short in Bodyguard, and but that, I mean, that's like every father and son is, you know, that was my job, you know, it always is. So, you know,
The man of many.
My little girl goes, "Is Daddy gonna fight again? Is Daddy fighting again? You know,
Daddy has a mohawk and looks like a biker."
Did you get any weird looks though when you drew the whole thing out and you were just home and you went to
in London, I felt insecure about my look. I did. I put a sock hat on really quick when I went home. Because it did require a lot of second looks. I mean, I was surprised. Well, I thought it was a pretty fierce look.
Yeah, yes.
And so I was a little surprised by it. We even put a little scar right there. And I was surprised by it. So I didn't really want to go out and give the look away. And I have my own insecurities myself about looking that way.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I do. Inevitably people want to take a picture with me, and it's like I don't, you know, I've always had that little, you know, the same thing you might have.
You know, but you're a movie star, it seems.
Well, you have that benefit of having that thing, but you don't feel like one unless you're just a narcissist. You know what I mean? And you go, I just got up here. I mean, that's just how I look, and you know, and you go, that picture is for all times, and now with these selfies, so. You know, that picture's going to fly around.
This is this homeless man I met.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, no, that picture's going to fly around, and you're conscious of that.
I
think people are much more so than you might think, unless you just are in love with yourself. You know, and you just want to do it.
You were killed off in the Superman movie, but I was told by some comic book people that Superman really revives Jonathan Kent and brings him back to life. And I wonder if anybody from Warner's or DC or Universe or anything has ever said, you know, Kevin, or you might be called back in one of these future installments.
I didn't know I was going to be in the second one. Zach just called me up and said, I've got some kind of, where he sees you on the mountain, you know.
That's
it's
right.
Weird. I go, well, guess what else is new about Superman?
It sounds like you did do some directing in this, is that right?
Pardon me?
It sounds as if you did some directing.
In Criminal?
Yeah.
There was it was only in the sense that I had to do the underwater work, but did that with the stuntman, cameraman. We were by ourselves. Ariel was off having to do something else. And, you know, only 5 or 6 people can be in the water, so why not him take the big crew and go over? So it was the stunt coordinator, second unit guy, and myself, because I've been in water a lot down in that thing. And I don't know if this shot's still in, but I did one shot for him where he comes up and actually is cutting off those cuffs. Now that shot may not be in it, but I did that because I think that we can't just have him swimming to the top and then end up in the house. They may have done that.
That's what they did.
That's what they did. Well, I had a shot where you start off by seeing a man and a boy fishing, and then if you look under the cement, I pulled myself up just shivering, and there's like corrugated metal, and he's just trying to cut that, and then had a little bit of a walk where the blood was very, very severe. But in movies, they're always trying to advance. So
it would have been nice, actually, because you wonder when he's out going up to the top with his hands tied, you know, how easy is it to really, because we see him hit the bottom of the
water. Well, these are,
water.
It's always a difference in filmmaking. I don't mind these character moments to get you places. Other people go, well, we can just jump up to the house. We can just do that. And so that's not my style.
You're a rebel, aren't you, at heart?
No, I think what I'm saying is pretty normal stuff. Well, people have learned how to advance story really fast. Maybe rebel's not so much a word as out of step. My filmmaking is a little bit out of step. I kind of look at something and I go, whenever I can advance a story, I'll advance it. But whenever I go, I think we need this connective fiber, then I do. And I'm not worried about that, because my feeling is that once somebody's actually in the seat, forget about your test screenings and your focus groups and things. Once somebody's actually in the seat, the chances are they're not going anywhere. So you can give them the things that you wanted them to see.
Yeah.
You know, if you know anything about focus groups, I think they did a statistic that it says that when they ask the people that have watched the movie, how many think the movie is too slow, that there's like 17% of people will always say that anyway. So you really got to look above and beyond the 17%. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I just look at things a little differently.
Kevin,
when
are you
going to
direct again?
Last question, sorry.
A few more. This guy's woke me up.
We want you to direct
again. I have a Western that I want to direct.
Cool.
And I'd like to just direct it next spring. I just came back from scouting it last week in New Mexico.
Okay.
It's about 10 hours, so I'm not going to leave anything out.
It's a mini-series.
No connecting fiber. I consider it a long movie.
Like Hatfield and McCoys?
It could be like that. It could also, I haven't figured out the configuration. It could also be four movies. It could be one Memorial Day, one Christmas, one 4th of July. So every 6 months. So in a true serial fashion, as opposed to somebody making a movie and going, hey, it did all right. Let's make another one.
And figure out what we want to do next.
Yeah. So it's a continuation. It covers about 30 years. And it's really beautiful. It's very harsh. It's very woman-oriented, if you can believe that. I mean, men are in it. You know, they drive the level of violence. Right. But women are a very big part of it. The parts are really good. So
is it based on a book?
No, it was just based on an idea that I had a long time ago.
Original.
Will there be someone getting sucker punched over a cup of coffee?
I know. Well, you know, he just ruined that for me, didn't he? Just.
Well, he had to tell you that it was French and not Spanish. It's not really nice.
Yeah, I know. And I didn't say motherfucker in a mean way.
You're saying that at all. It's surprising.
He said it in a mean way. I said motherfucker like, you're my buddy.
And aren't you filming a movie now? Or that's what it says on IMDb, that you're filming something now?
No, I am going to do a thing called Hidden Figures.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's about the space program, and I'm doing a supporting part in that. And that is about these three black women who had a tremendous impact on NASA. In fact, John Glenn wasn't even going to go because the computer, the IBM, had broke down. And John Glenn said, I will go if this woman does the calculations. And then that woman went on to have a 40-year career. And there was two others that they were just gifted women, and we don't know about them, you know, being so. I mean, there was so many people that contribute to actually say that. But boy, John, because she did the math on the wall, and had to, and John Glenn trusted her.
Wow.
So that's kind of moving to me. So I'm going to be a part of that movie. I'm the only person that's not actually playing an actual true character. I'm a combination of two or three people.
Okay.
The women are all, what do you call, real.
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 And so they couldn't get the rights to either one, you know, whatever it was, so they kind of created a character that's running the space task program, and that will be me. But it's these women that just were gifted from one 8 years old, even when blacks couldn't even go to school.
Wow.
They brought her into, I think, Virginia University and sat down with all these 20-year-olds and went to the board and just blew them away. So she was touched by God with a gift. And the other black woman, really funny, she comes home after work and she has to fix a TV for her husband, she has to fix a car for him. She actually fixes the IBM that's not working.
Wow.
Because she just kind of gets under there and looks at it. So, you know, the celebration of people that actually have an impact, that get lost in history, it happens all the time.
Well,
Kevin, what
last
do you love
last
about telling stories after all these great movies? What is it still that touches you?
I guess I do love it. I do. I worked on a book called Explorers Guild,
yeah.
And that was a, you know, maybe we'll do another one. And just, I don't know what it is. you get off together with a friend and you start firing back ideas back and forth, and when you can get paid to do it, then it really gets cool. That's what I, you know, but I like storytelling. I like writing, I like editing. I think I like mostly the mechanical things. I mentioned rehearsal.
Yeah.
I really like rehearsal. You know, red carpet is probably sixth or seventh on my list.
I was too.
Premiere is sixth or seventh on my list. And it's not that I don't like to go. I like my children, my friends, see my wife get dressed up. I like that part of it. But I have generally liked the mechanics of movie making.
I wonder if with the Oscars, being an Oscar winner and a member of the Academy, if you think the Academy can actually change after what's been going on the last 2 years with all the agitation?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I did a movie called Black or White, and Octavia was really good in that movie. I was pretty good in it. But nobody mentioned that movie at all. No one talked about the fact that we were bringing up the issues of that, you know? So I don't know what to say about any of it. You know, I think the voting body probably has to, the demographics of that have to change. But I never see overt racism myself. Maybe it's there. I don't know. If I catch it or I see it, I would put a stop to it. I mean, I made out with Whitney because she was the cutest girl on the set. So I never had a, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I don't mean to be naive. Actually, when I did Black or White, I took it to, what's the town in St. Louis?
Ferguson.
What?
Ferguson.
Yeah. People said, don't go there. And I go, why not? Why not go there? You know? And so maybe that's a rebel. But in terms of directing, you know, stuff, I kind of like the fat. I like fat in me, and I like a little fat in my movies. I don't like them so lean, and I like subplot. So
right.
I always have.
Thank you so
guys.
Much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Always.